Well, I just pushed the red button and we're off. So welcome back to another show with Hello Earth and Michael from Maui. This is hour 25 and Michael and I have been on the phone talking, and all of a sudden I said, oh, wait until he was about to say something about, well, we'll get to that later, but let's start off by saying there's a large amount of sighting in Stephenville, a UFO. I don't know of an entire town, but quite a few people saw this UFO, and it's going to be on NBC Today Show tomorrow morning. It's 16 January, so by the time you hear this, it'll be over. But it caused a stir. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, we've been talking away, and how about if we start where we left off? Just when we were closing the hour, I did something I never really did before, and I said, oh, Michael, there's a minute left. Go ahead, say whatever you want to say. So you decide to tell us some actual people's names that you fellowshiped with. And
yeah, well, there are names of different entities or beings, if you want to call them that, people. And they're not from Earth, and they have names. There is a way that they gave me their names, and it's not as easy or as simple as saying, hi, my name is, you know. I mean, I'm looking at these individuals, and they're real, and they're definitely not from Earth, but these are the ones that Riley called them elders. Well, anyway, what I keyed off on was they're all dressed in purple, and they have kind of a bigger head, and I was the one that was saying your brains are outside of your head. You know, because they have a head shape that is sort of got a cleft on the middle of it, and it's got two major bumps or lobes under the shape of their head. So the head looks somewhat heart-shaped, and the texture of the skin on top of their head, which is bald, is very wrinkled, and it looks like the wrinkles, you know, the
of the brain.
Of the brain, yeah, but it's really not. That's the one where one of them just told me that you know, he'd let me touch his head through his hands, and he gave me control of his hand and feelings, and I could actually move it around, and I was satisfied to find out that, yeah, I could feel his...
You were moving his hand around?
Yeah, I was moving his hand around.
With telepathy?
With telepathy, right.
That's
he gave me that. Cause, yeah, I
didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I did say that once in the earlier recording.
Yes, well, you said that he put his hand on his own head, and you could feel his head through his hand, but I didn't know that you could move his hand around.
I've got a way here, and then I could move his hand around and feel his head. And then, of course, you know, he'd tell me if I was satisfied, you know, ask me if I was satisfied, and I said, yeah, satisfied, and then it all didn't work anymore. But ultimately, I discovered that they wouldn't let me touch them, in a sense, but they sort of let me feel them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these are the ones that I realized had at the time when they began their worship, you know, because of my desire to know God. They gave me part of it in their worship, and then was surrounded by that bluish, purplish light that first emanated from them. Then it just simply filled the room, And then when that happened, what part that I didn't remember that came alive after I began to describe them was that they all came up to me and sort of like not shook my hand and said, how do you do, you know, but it was like that in a sense of what they did. They all gave me their names, and what happened was I just simply rattled them off because these names were just given to me one by one in each individual. And I think I tuned in on them. Actually, that's a way of recognizing them because of that introduction or that coming together and that time when all the blue light was still surrounding us, you know. And it was a nice, a wonderful experience, actually, because they're full of love, too. They were not, you know, trying to force their will upon me. You know, that whole experience was beautiful because once I said I would, you know, like help, I'll do what I can, you know. Because you know, they weren't there to lecture me. I thought they were there. In fact, I ended up lecturing them about, you know, who do you think you are, telling us our shortcomings. You should be helping us, and oh, we would like you to help us, you know.
Right. And what did they think they were doing if you wanted them to help us?
What they do is they influence us. They communicate with us to whoever will listen. They try to influence us. You see, one of the things that we've got to understand in the fabric that was shown to me, the visual experience, that bluish light, was so that they could give me the concept of divinity, the omnipresence, the fabric of God, you might say. It all boils down to the reality or the totality of reality. Totality of reality, first source and center, what is the fabric of the universe? This ever-drawing power, this power that comes from beyond, was given, I was given a demonstration by these beings who have a relationship to, you might say, God or the fabric of the universe at a higher level, but a level that we can experience, or I could, and I'm sure that if anyone else was with them, they probably could, but it establishes a certain base of consciousness and reality, and this consciousness is what they influence in their desire, their personal desire to help us, which comes from the influential flow of power, you might say, the flow of love from God, and influences them to influence us, you know, in our in our thought, to elevate our consciousness or the way we think and perceive things.
And you're referring to something more than just when you were there.
I'm referring
that
they're doing that. Yes.
Yes, they want to influence us from their vantage point.
But their vantage point, which is not to come here and say, mechanically, say, here we are. We're going to show you how to build a non-polluting car. You know. Rather than do that, they are watching us move and become expressions of the Creator, free-willed expressions, making our mistakes, growing up, and then they are not going to lecture us, but sort of guide us through our desire. See, there's in discussion in another environment, where was there that classroom environment where seemed like a restaurant, but it was really a classroom, and Dano came over and drew seven circles on the table.
Yes.
In that same environment was the concept of gravity, universal gravity. Two forces of gravity were described. The first force of gravity was the the gravity of all things back to the first source and center. In other words, there is an expression outward, which we call creation, or some kind of universe, mm-hmm. you know, and that can be explored dimensionally, explored in time, explored in many ways. And all of that is an outward expression from the first source, or God himself. That creates a gravity that draws us back to him. But what happens is energy gets organized and intelligent and coherent and conscious. And that's what we are. We are at that end of this explosive creative force. Rather than just mechanically creating little atoms and stuff expanding outwards, continuously moving in an outward direction, there's creation going on, and we are sentient, conscious, and then we fall back into the gravity source, back toward first source and center, ultimately becoming more and more like God. So this is the primary gravity source. It was one which was interfered with in our education by one named Lucifer, who said there is no force of gravity pulling anyone back to God. But there is. Whether our consciousness is desiring to know the secrets of the universe, or are explaining the mechanics of something, or like Einstein's theory of relativity, his desire to have that one one explanation for all that is, that is part of the universal first source gravity, the gravity that pulls back toward the creator of the universe, the originator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expressed in that way, through a scientific way, you might say, through a coherent logical and conscious method, but there is also a spiritual opposite too. It's this heartfelt love that draws you back to our love. You do not, you know, do any of us get drawn toward hate?
No. You know,
it's not a force. It can create something in an emotional way and in a spiritual way. But we are not drawn toward it. You know,
right.
We react toward it. We can become, perturbed by it very much. But
mm-hmm.
the real force is love
mm-hmm.
that pulls us back. So this is another spiritual energy that is on the opposite end. And like that item they gave me in the beginning, and you and I discussed it. We got a picture of it now, don't we, Curtis?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, maybe you can show that.
Yes, I could show that.
It's just you're the one that came up with this explanation. Well, it's such a basic thing that they gave to me when I left them. They said, take this. This is for you to keep and to know that when you see it, we've been here. And if you know that we've been here and you see that object missing, know that we've come again. And
you're speaking of an object that the beings out near Saturn gave you.
Right. This was that it was given to me just before I left the shuttle ship. You know, the ones that you get pictures of them. You know, and actual we got kind of a picture of the evidence of some of the tractor element, the
mm-hmm.
blue light beams and stuff. But what it amounts to is that you're the one that said all things in balance. It was an object, the rocking horse, I call it, that there was is a balanced object, which balances the two. Our consciousness
mm-hmm.
is highly respective, our intelligence. I remember, again, I've said this before, that Nella or Onsia Juan, Ms. Juan, she would always say, "You're not, you know, you're not stupid. You're not, you know, you're very, you know, smart. You're very." I mean, she was saying that in a general sense too. We as a human race, maybe we don't have the kind of super duper memory like a elephant. An elephant can actually has much better memory than we do. But what we have is a kind of consciousness and ability that seeks out truth and is able to make discoveries on the intellectual basis. And also, we have an opposite side, which is spiritual, which is able to experience, move with, and dimensionally transfer our understanding into other planes of existence or reality, all in which comes from the first source. And become truly divine, participate, or become divine in nature, you know, and that is built within us, but we just need to function with it and understand it much more than on an animalistic level.
Mm-hmm. Out of all the objects on Earth, and there are a lot of objects on Earth, that's what they chose to give you.
Right, and you said, what does it represent? And, you know, you said, balance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Balance.
So if what we're trying to do here is balance between, you know, our scientific, intellectual, conscious point and a spiritual point. And all things in balance, having a certain level of understanding on reality. So...
Well, it was interesting that when you and your wife were here,
right.
She was looking for it on the computer and said, it's an object on Earth and I may be able to find one. You drew one. And then, and now you said you found one on eBay.
Yeah, I've got one on eBay and I sent you a picture of it and it's an identical one.
I'll post it with this page.
Yeah, and it's nothing... I would assume was very special. However, it's one of those desk toys that people can use. And
mm-hmm.
I think at one time it was used for people focusing on, like any of the desk toys,
mm-hmm.
for one purpose or another. But this one maybe was a desk toy for trying to exercise. What do you call it when you can move objects with your mind?
Well, it's not a word we use very often because it's pretty hard to move an object with your mind.
Yeah, right. But that you could try to rock it. And I remember telling you about the time I was sitting in front of I think it was in Philadelphia, maybe, where, maybe not, but anyway, it's a big fountain.
Oh, the fountain.
And, you know, was able to make it go to the right or the left, whichever way I wanted it to go.
Is that what you said on the recordings, or did you just tell me that over the phone one day?
No, I believe I said it over a recording.
I hope so.
Yeah. And...
But you could repeat it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, what happened was was watching and enjoying the was a fountain, which was a steady stream coming out relatively high. It looks like about 20 feet high. And
yes.
I decided,
stay close to that microphone.
Yeah, I decided maybe I ought to see if it moves right or left according to the way I leaned. So as I sat, I leaned to the right, and it moved to the right. It started to splash all its spray on the right side. So most of the water fell on the right side. Then I said, that's interesting. It followed me. So I moved to the left, and it did the same thing. And I was trying to make it do that too, just sort of like enjoy to see it spray on that side, and I did it several times over and over until, you know, I was just doing it one after another, and there was not one occasion when I moved to the right or the left that it didn't follow. And then we all got up and we were going to leave that area. And I turned to my family, my daughter, you know, and my wife. The daughter is the one that flies jets now, 26 years old. And
for Continental anyway, Airlines.
Yeah. And I said, watch this. I'm going to make it move to the right. And I did. And I made it to the left. And they did it over about 3 or 4 times. And they looked at and I said, how do you think of that? And he says, never mind. You know, we all had a good laugh and walked away from that. It just, you know, shrugged it off.
Uh-huh. Chance.
You're just lucky.
Just lucky.
Just lucky. And we shrug off a lot of that. We as human beings, we shrug off a lot of this stuff as coincidence, you know, and it really can be developed, you know. And it's an important factor. I think even Riley was talking about being shown on another planet, and it might have been, he said, Biave, where he saw children, and he said that was his children or something, and they were doing this type of exercise where they're moving things with their minds.
Yes, that was on Biave. He saw it in a video, he said.
Yeah, right. And it's not something unique to them, but it was more trying to tell maybe Riley that that's something that they can help us with. And my that exercise that I did was one that we can do, because I'm born and raised on Earth.
Right.
And I'm from Earth. So, and it's so that's a story on that. And you know, that rocking horse might be used to, once you start it rocking, you try to keep it rocking by just focusing on it. Goes back to a kind of a level of reality that we kind of like question. We want to know more, and that's all part of the first primary gravity, that drawing back to God, or the center, or exploration, the curiosity. That's all part of that gravity circuit. But then we want to, I decided in that same environment, I said, you know, well, explain to me, or you guys know everything. What is gravity, was my question.
Mm-hmm.
And the simple answer that came up, just that same guy that said, I said, what is this place? That same guy that said, it's called New Jerusalem. This place is called New Jerusalem. That same guy answered, and he said, everything's growing. That's what he said.
Everything is growing?
Everything is growing.
Hmm.
And I said, you mean, you know, like how it is, then it was like put in a simpler sense. Everything is growing, but not but everything is growing relative to each other, so nobody can see it growing.
Mm-hmm. He said that's what gravity is?
Gravity is like, yeah, I guess so. If it was put down to the sense of the very beginning was the outward expression of this first gravity, which we created the universe, but all of which is created is continuing to expand.
Okay.
And now this goes into a whole discussion on about what is this all about, you know. Let's say, when you has anyone felt a point, let's say, on a roller coaster where you feel like you don't feel gravity?
Oh, yes, when there's gravity is all nonsense. When it's
Like you're floating.
Yes, when you're going.
Or then there's a point where you're like you're dropping and you feel like your stomach goes into your
right. If you're in a plane, you can fall, you can dive toward the earth as fast as you fall, and everything in the plane
seems to float.
My younger brother, he said that was his favorite ride with me when we took a little pot, and I put chessmen and different objects, little tiny objects in this pot.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he was holding it on his lap, and all of a sudden they would float right out of the pot.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we've got a picture of that. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say that's exactly what happens most of the time, except now everything is growing. So let's say Earth grew relative to, in mass to you, because the Earth is so huge. Wouldn't it grow really fast?
Oh.
Up toward you?
So if Earth is growing, that's creating the gravity, but if it was going the opposite way, everything would float?
Well, if because you are that floating, is your movement is essentially it seems that way, but you're really not. You're essentially not seeing the relative spacing or feeling the relative spacing because you're not pushing against something. But from another observational point, you're kind of like, you know, falling.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were in a different observational point, it would look like the Earth was coming up to you. Now, mm-hmm. this is the strange thing about that explanation. Everything is growing. Now, wow. Now, that's kind of, you know, throw Newton out the window. But Newton, all of gravity goes into this mysterious, unexplained force. Nobody seems to be able to capture it. Nobody seems to be able to understand it.
That's right. They can't understand it.
Right. But if you were to look from the point of view where everything is expanding, there's a different concept there.
Well, I say, well, if we are
it's sort of so strange that I really think it's kind of nuts. But that's what they said, you know.
But then if we were expanding at the rate gravity would be, the Earth would become larger and larger.
Exactly.
But I mean, at a much larger rate than the gravity would equal.
At a much larger rate.
In other words, we fall at about 60 miles, let's say we fall at about 60 miles an hour.
Okay.
Without, you know, you've got your parachute on, but you haven't opened it yet. You're just free falling.
Yeah.
You're falling at about 60 miles an hour, maybe a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the air, and you're going through the air, that slows you down, but mm-hmm. let's forget about the air. But 60 miles an hour, if it's the opposite way, the Earth is expanding at 60 miles an hour, within 24, 48 hours, the Earth would be considerably larger.
Right. So would you, though. So would everything
else. So would
else.
I.
And so with the space in between everything. But this is a kind of an interesting concept. Because if you talk about it relative to your own spacing and your own environment, it wouldn't mean much because everything is relative. That's where, you know, you need a point of reference. We need something to stay the same size so we can see it growing. From that point, we can... But if at the atomic level, at the particle level, at the very most minute level, you talk about string, it's nothing but string theory. It's only talking about these bits and pieces, and nothing more than vibrations. But if you look at vibrations, they're just oscillations, and they just really expand outward.
And this this person who told you this,
he just tried to give me the simplest, because I wasn't gonna.
And those were his exact words?
Yeah, everything's growing.
Everything is growing.
Yeah. And this is a simple, and you can try go figure.
A what?
You can figure it out.
Yeah, I'll try and figure that out. But the Earth isn't becoming larger. I mean, in 1 year, just think how much the Earth would grow if it was growing at 60 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, but just think how much the universe would grow, and how much everything related to its reality grows. So this outward expression coming from the first source
but it's still that
permeates everything is, mm-hmm. essentially the one that helps cause gravity.
I see.
And whether you understand that the universe is growing, if it all grows at the same size, it's the only one that had a hint of this truth.
Yes.
Was in I think I saw this in what was it called? There was a movie just called about E.T. the Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the end of the Men in Black, there was a little pendant that was worn by this cat, and in that pendant there was a whole universe.
Mm.
When he opened it up, there was a whole galaxy and universe that was much, much smaller. So somebody else, if they got that in the Men in Black, somebody else has, you know, broadcast this concept to Earth somehow,
mm-hmm,
for creative people to pick up and write about or use it as a... Because it was going to save somebody else's universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that universe was very tiny at the time. It was able to fit within the cat's pendant.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat would run around with it.
So is this how they control the force of gravity?
No, this is... Oh! That's another story, which is something, you know, that would you kind of naturally would think about, but it has to do with just not overcoming gravity, but simply just having a relative density in a sense.
A relative density?
Yeah, relative density. So, in a sense, like how I asked them, with that huge V-wing craft,
mm-hmm,
so what do you need wings for out here? There's no atmosphere for it to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you said they do use it in an atmospheric environment, and it functions in that manner. They essentially understand lift and all of this and use it, but they also understand how it kind of gave me a hint as clouds floating. Why did the clouds float? Because it's being able to be held in an atmosphere, because there's various forces, thermal forces within gas that keep it there. And when let's say you take a craft and you could say, okay, I'm going to use gravity, but actually weigh it relative to the Earth. And the thing would weigh like maybe a ton.
Okay.
But let's say they decided that they didn't want it to weigh a ton anymore. Did make it weigh 1 gram.
Okay.
But because of its size, it would just sort of float away because it would displace a lot of that stuff. Like a balloon. But because of the way they handle things, it wouldn't act like a balloon at all. But this is a little bit far out in one of their concepts. There's a lot more behind it, and I don't understand it, but I just asked for, you know, one little question. I said, if I can get the answer to that, maybe I might find the secret of the universe. Maybe it is. I don't know.
And what else did he say about gravity?
That's about it. It was just, you know, the details of it all is for us to contemplate, I believe, and we can look at it from a different perspective.
So you're sort of saying that when he described what gravity was, he was just pointing us in the right direction to say, this is what gravity is, go in this direction.
Yeah, and then I asked about growth.
Growth?
Growth. I mean, you know, if the planets grew, you know, what is happening here? If the sun grew, the planets grew, and then, you know, they showed me they showed me the death of in a sense of our solar system, you might say, a very long time from now, when the sun sort of like just became real big, and there wasn't any more space, even say, you might took in the innermost planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was when Saturn, I remember that because it was sort of sad. They didn't understand my feeling of it being sad. When Saturn grew to a point where it absorbed its rings, and it felt really sad because Saturn is so, you got this beautiful picture of Saturn on your website.
Oh, yes.
And can you imagine watching all that beauty get absorbed, and so you have just a round planet at the end?
No, that's it's a beautiful image from the other side.
Yeah.
In the shadow of Saturn.
Well, what I saw was, you know, Saturn gobbled up its rings.
Mm.
And I felt sad, and they looked at me, and they knew I felt sad, and they felt like, why do you feel sad? That's just the way things are, you know. Because then my concept of beauty, my concept of appreciation, it says, but that's how it looks. You know, they don't understand sometimes the concept of what we look at as beautiful. You know, so it's part of what makes us special.
Oh, yes, special to them?
Special to them, special to God. Yeah.
And why are we special?
Oh, because we can perceive things like that as beautiful. And
we have a heart?
Yeah, you might say that.
Hmm. So you're saying they enjoy seeing our emotions?
I guess you might say emotion, but might wonder about that. What is beautiful to you? You know, what is, you know, all of those things. Like beauty, and emotion of beauty, it brings awe and inspire, you know. Ugliness, maybe. Ugliness is something relative to something beautiful. When Saturn lost its rings in that expansion of Saturn, it didn't mean it turned ugly, it just lost something beautiful.
It lost
what? I felt. And I'm just, you know, just trying to repeat what I did experience there.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, by the way, was smaller a long time ago, too. If we were to shrink Earth, the continents would all match up.
Yeah, they all, the tectonic plates are expanding.
Yeah, the interesting thing about what I did discover about, that there is also people who have already know all this stuff about the planet Earth growing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, when you take samples of the ocean floor, very young in comparison to the continents. You know, old mm-hmm. stuff is on top of the earth, the crustal stuff. The undersea floor is all young and new. Where did that stuff come from? Well, it came from inside of the earth. Well, the earth is growing. It's part of this gravity circuit, this expansion is going on too. And it actually, the globe does go through a certain kind of expansion. It doesn't always happen. This is the thing that they warned me about. It says, and when you look at gravity in terms of expand and everything is growing, everything does grow, but doesn't grow all evenly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you might say, the appearance of the crust of the Earth is different a long time ago than what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to shrink, you know, if Earth was a balloon and you took air out and everything shrunk back, and you left the continents as solid and the ocean basins as part of the elastic membrane of the balloon, when it shrunk back, you would see all the continents fit together.
Mm-hmm.
So there is tectonic movement. Of course there is. But what is interesting about our largest earthquake that we recorded so far in Indonesia, 9.7, is there was a displacement that was upward, and not a shear displacement, or a displacement that was shear or horizontal, you might say. It was a vertical displacement. That vertical displacement was very large. It popped out. Yeah, it caused a tsunami. This is growth. This is a type of expansion of our planet Earth. So that's another thing, kind of like they showed me.
Okay, well, I can see how having the Earth expand, that would cause gravity, but for instance, if it stopped expanding, we would just float into the air. But it doesn't seem that Earth is growing that much to cause that much gravity, but
well,
it's an interesting comment.
Well, there's a different, with this other expansion of the actual planet, it was in a different discussion, in a sense that it was we're continuing down the same line of logic that I was kind of walking down, because it gives me hints, gives us hints. In other words, there's a kind of expansion that happened that is able to be measured in relative to the size. So let's say the continents remains fairly much the same size as they are, and you would take the ocean basins and shrink them back, and the continents would lock back together. We have a smaller Earth in terms of its circumference. However,
where would all those oceans go?
Yeah, that's where is another point. Where did all those oceans go? Where did those oceans come from?
Where did they come from?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things going on here, and a lot of questions that could possibly arise, realizing that there's a lot of water sloshing around in space too, you know. In fact, comets and the rings of Saturn, lots of ice and water. So that all can pour onto our planet.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was, it would be gaseous form or liquid form, or ice form, I don't know, ends up back on our planet. But anyway, some of the deep stuff the deepest stuff is under the ocean, you know, deepest holes and trenches. But that's just a little bit of the hints that they were giving me. Because these things run contrary to what I learned, you know. There's a lot of things that run contrary to what I learned and what we learn in school and stuff.
How is that?
You know, like, you know, if we just understand gravity in terms of Newtonian physics or something, you know, basically, we only can go so far. There's got to be a readjustment in some of the things and the way we understand them. Otherwise, we cannot go beyond another point in our creativity and our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a you know.
You mean they can't take us beyond a point of our understanding?
Yeah, because they got to reconstruct some of our understanding. At one time, our human race was nothing but a superstitious bunch of people.
Well, with telepathy, they should be able to communicate really well with us.
Well, that's why we're, you know, making our moves into this age. Right now, we're at the age of real knowing, you know, tremendous knowing, knowledge, and understanding. And internet is one of the powers and vehicles that was developed, but the knowledge that passes through the internet is another thing that can be questioned, because it involves a freedom of thought too there.
Mm-hmm.
And this angle which I'm giving you is, you know, I mean, it's easy to get shot down, you know, with this concept, but I'm just trying to repeat it. Maybe somebody could pick it up, or maybe somebody already has picked it up and has drawn some ideas that challenge our accepted science, you know,
mm-hmm.
our accepted way of thinking. There's so much accepted ways of thinking, whether it be scientific as well as, spiritual, religious, philosophic, these parts that are not tangible in terms of a mechanical instrument. These are intangibles in terms of the way we perceive things and the way we express ourselves.
You mean like moving things with your mind, or building things with your mind?
Well, no, that's another level together too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But building our things with our minds is a creative process. What we can think, many times we can build.
But I mean, you know, physically build it with our minds.
Oh, you mean physically create it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a whole other level which I saw done. Which yes. was, remember I told you, they showed me how they controlled like nanotechnology. They grew the room. They grew things. It's not time consuming. It just happens. If you want one, you make one. You just grow it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as. It's not the same as how we exchange in exchange for time and resource. We use currency and money. Things don't have to be that way.
Well, you said that architectural world near Saturn is growing, and it was alive.
Right, and it's moving in a... it all goes back to that same concept, too, that it is growing relative to itself, relative to other things, too. So, in a sense, they're continually making it bigger relative to, let's say, our known dimension of size.
Mm-hmm.
So its diameter, maybe when it started, was smaller relative to, let's say, a moon of Saturn. Now it's, you know, getting to become the size of many of the moons, and actually having to hide behind some of these moons. That's an interesting thing, though. I think I did mention that when I left, they let me, first they asked me where Earth was, so I pointed out the sun, and from that point I got a kind of an idea approximately where the Earth might be, and they said, oh, you know enough. And then they turned me around and showed me we were leaving the architecture field, the New Jerusalem, and they let me see the moon.
See the moon?
One of the moons.
One of the moons of Saturn?
Yeah, the one with the big crater in it. The one looks like the Death Star.
Yes.
Mimas, I think they call it. Anyway, it might be using Mimas as a hiding spot, too.
Looks like a big door on it. Looks like a big hatch, round hatch.
Big hatch. I don't know what it is, but they let me, and they made sure I remembered it.
It's something.
Yeah. But,
so they took you out near that moon? I'm sorry.
Well, we were leaving it. We were leaving that, and I said, I remember thinking, we were in that moon, And, I distinctly remember going into it and having no texture whatsoever, being smooth and everything, and very huge. But this is the moon, you know, so it might be, I'm not sure, it could have been behind it or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, it was right there, so it might be in a relative position to it. Ultimately, we will probably... we've got one photograph that looks like two things close to Mimas, you know, so. But,
Well, there, you said the thought adjusters help us with things and guide us.
Our thought adjusters are part of the fabric of our reality. And, they're very, very important to our, that gravity circuit that draws us back. We do not pay attention to our adjuster. We actually talk, you know, to our adjuster in different ways, whether it be with word or with heart. We won't make our journey inward toward back to our first sources and become essentially more grown up divine beings. Divine is the word. We're given that right to, or the actual purpose to attain divinity, which is sort of like exactly opposite of what most people say. You know, we're just imperfect people just running around, you know, trying to be nice.
Yes.
Or just, you know, save from imperfection. Actually, we're made imperfectly that we might attain divinity in a personal sense, become a personalized expression of divinity, not God, definitely, but actual expressions. That's why we call the children of God. We're all God's children, you know.
Well, you asked about a car.
Yeah.
Or a device we can become mobile on this planet with without polluting the planet.
Right.
Can't these thought adjusters help us?
Well, they already have. We already have come up with some really good ways. It's up to us to make the transition. Initially, the transition is stuck within the muck of finance.
Mm-hmm.
And going away from going away from the New Jerusalem and going right into the Bible, basically the Bible talks about a breakdown of the financial system before the advent of Jesus's return, you might say, the return of him and the heavenly host, including the teachers. The teachers are probably the most important right now and are making their way in and have, in many areas, made strides in helping us adjust. But there's got to be a real change in our financial system, because the financial system is an illusion already. It's a manipulative illusion that will be, that functions, but it is controlled and manipulated by powers that shouldn't have that kind of control.
How often do you communicate with them?
Well, the first thing you have to remember is the thought adjuster is your immediate, you personally have that. And that is your gateway toward all knowing. The thought adjuster.
Okay.
Yeah, the fractal element of God inside of you gives you opening and relationship to, first of all, to deity, to first source and center, and to these other beings. That's how telepathy works. It is not a, it's sort of like transmitter receiver.
Yes.
If you have a transmitter and a receiver, or transceiver, a little walkie-talkie, you can go talk to your friends or whatever. But without it, without it being on, you have no ability. So if the thought adjuster functions as a transceiver, you might be able to talk with whoever else has one of theirs active.
Mm-hmm.
So besides coming to the point where it's talking to you, God is talking to you. That's the important. The instrument is what we have.
You mean our brain is our instrument?
Our brain is a instrument that sometimes interferes with the application of the adjuster into our lives. We get confused. We get mixed signals. But the relationship with the adjuster, first of all, comes through our desire toward God.
Right.
Okay? Without that, having that desire towards God, we have no direction. We've got to have that first. So first source and center, fabric of the universe, God the Father, is given the primary way. The primary way was through Jesus Christ. Is probably the best example, where he said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." When he said that, he explained how we as sentient beings must first understand this vehicle. He explained it as himself being that vehicle is a way that he personalized this way and gave the adjuster personality. And then through that we have opening to all truth.
I'm sorry, we have opening to what?
All truth.
All truth.
Including talking to these beings who you have, know what channel they're on, you might say. Mm-hmm. When they introduced their names, they gave me essentially their channel or something like that. If you were to use earthly terms or technical terms now. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you know, of course it's not the real way it works, but the adjuster has a beautiful function that way. That's why the Lord's Prayer is such an effective, powerful prayer. You know, when there are beings that operate on a level that shouldn't be doing, they're breaking certain divine laws, and you pray that prayer, they're immediately put on report.
Hmm.
By adjuster indwelt beings. And of course, much more when you have beings who are actually extensions of the Godhead, and the one who was the greatest extension of the Godhead, one that was given to us, and the one and only that was given to us is Jesus Christ. And then he established the way. So that's the way it was made. So all of this is all part of the way everything hangs together.
Yes, well, we have about a minute and a half to go.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just getting really into this thought adjuster.
Yeah, we moved away from other stuff into thought adjuster. I think that is a real, you know, you hear people talk and call their thought adjuster many names. But the important thing he does is not given a personality. It's not given, you might say, a name many times. But we often will name the, you know, the adjuster. And sometimes he says, the Lord told me, or God told me, or something told me, you know, or had a sudden inspiration to solve a particular problem. This many times comes from the adjuster. People wonder, how does the brain work? But there's other factors involved.
Well, we have a few more seconds. Next time, let's talk more about the thought adjuster also.
Okay.
And it's wonderful having you back on again, Michael, and we'll do it again next Tuesday if we can.
Totally confuse everybody.
it was really good. I like that part about gravity. Let's do that more some more.
Okay.
So, aloha, Michael.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha.
Bye.
Bye.